Welcome to Nature Bats Last on the Progressive Radio Network. It's NBL on PRN.FM. This January 26, 2016 edition, episode 74 of Nature Bats Last comes to you live from the Mud Hut in southern New Mexico. Our thanks again to Afrozen for his theme song contribution. You can find more of his work on SoundCloud.com. Today's show, we have a climate summary update, but we start and begin with our guest interview.
Andrew, but wait.
Oh, sorry.
We have a live studio audience, and we'd be remiss not to mention them. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Sorry, studio audience. Thanks for coming down. Now keep it down. Angie Cordero is a feminist, humanitarian, pacifist, and a single mother. She's a Montessorian and a lifetime member of the Theosophical Society of America. Her educational background is eclectic and includes studies in nutrition, macrobiotics, permaculture, and early childhood development. She is an advocate for biodiversity, biodynamics, and sustainable solutions for a variety of humanitarian and ecological challenges. Angie blogs for Huffington Post, where her latest essay was titled COP21, Too Little, Too Late. She has worked as a volunteer at the Quotona Institute of the
Theosophy's Library.
Whew. I'm going to have to ask her what Theosophy is. Theosophy's Library for the past 8 years. She's an avid reader, finds cooking vegan feasts a delightful way to spend her time, and also gardens, sews, and plays piano, and cares for two abandoned cats. They found their way into her life as kittens. She's been a vegetarian since 1977. And a vegan since 1995. She's been riding her electric bicycle and using public transportation since 2008. Angie lives and thrives in her community of Ojai Village in California. Ojai is located 45 miles from Porter Ranch, where methane has been spewing into the atmosphere since late October 2015. Welcome to Nature Bats Last and the Progressive Radio Network, Angie.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. You guys are really rocking the airwaves every new show since Mark Austin was the guest speaker, and when he wanted to bring something new to the table, he sure did and kept me awake for many nights.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, thinking about what he had said. And then last week, Sarah Perry with her book, that was just an amazing interview that you all did. And then I'm really looking forward to next week. Corey Morningstar, I've been a big fan of hers since I made my way through her The Corporate Money Behind McBiden's Deinvestment Tour. That was quite a read. Anyway, thank you all for inviting me.
Absolutely. So what's Theosophy?
Well, to break it down, it's the study of wisdom. Studying wisdom, you know, the part of the Homo sapien that we have not really paid much attention to as far as our actions are concerned. So,
there's no, It's no wonder we never heard of it.
Yeah, we don't do
well,
wisdom.
You've probably heard of a lot of people that have been involved with Theosophy. Rudolf Steiner, Maria Montessori, let me think of Carl Jung, Einstein was involved with it a little bit. So, yeah, we don't have a huge banner, or people kind of find Theosophy.
Right. Now, we invited Angie on the show because she's a critical thinker and an excellent writer. She lives within shouting distance of Porter Ranch, and she's been researching the situation there. We'll kick off the conversation with some music from Pink Floyd's song, Money. It's a gas. This is a great tune to kick off today's discussion. This culture is all about money and methane, which comes in the form of natural gas used to heat those homes, cook food, and dry the clothes in Southern California, is the focus of our conversation today. Angie, let's get the lowdown from Porter Ranch, but let's start with sensationalism, entitlement, and denial. Do we really love money and the convenience it brings more than life itself?
Yes. Most people.
This is going to be a fast interview, isn't it? Sorry, please explain.
I'm sorry, but it seems so. It seems like it's at the crux of every solution. Is it profitable? And it's a sad situation because we have the technology to make our lives more comfortable and more humanitarian, but we seem to only think about the bottom line. And that's what's happening at Porter Ranch right now with families being evacuated, many questions not being answered, not because we don't know the answer or we don't know how to find the answer, but because finding those answers might put corporations into litigation. Finding those answers might cost a lot of money. So, yeah, it's a sad thing when money rules, and it seems to be what's, you know, what has happened and the situation that we were all born into. Very few people don't are able to you know, separate themselves from our civilization. I've tried. I ride my bike, don't own a car, don't pump gasoline into a vehicle that gets me from point A to point B. And it's a challenge. And, you know, on rainy days, I don't go out. I don't know where to go with this, except for maybe we could just get into Porter Ranch and what's happening. Like you all mentioned, I'm living 45 miles from Porter Ranch, and the people in our community here in Ojai know very little about it, simply because it's invisible. The methane that's going into the atmosphere isn't as black and oily as the oil that was going into the Gulf during the BP Deepwater Horizon spill, which this catastrophe has been likened to. Is that even a phrase, likened to? Aaron Brockovich said that this is the single biggest environmental disaster, air disaster, in my entire career, and I have worked on that I have ever worked on. We call this the BP oil spill on land, but actually, it's not on land. It's going into the air, and the only way that you can see it is with infrared cameras. They do have a nifty little counter that counts the methane that's being released into the air, and so far they say $14 million worth of methane has been leaked into the air, or 90,000 metric tons of it since today.
So can you give us some comparison? What is it? I mean, we know about dollars, but most people don't know about the metric tons. What does that compare to? Is that,
well, I
is that me
ask,
driving my car back and forth twice from here to Silver City? What?
Well, there was a nifty little little blurb on the internet about how in gasoline usage it's like 800 million gallons of gas.
Oh, is that it?
800 million. So that's almost a billion, right? 800 million. So maybe we'll get to a billion gallons of gas. It's, but like I said, two things. The oil spill was apparent because it was so black and so you can see it. And it was having an effect right then. And people were glued to their TVs during the Gulf oil spill. The ratings were going off the charts. But on this methane leak, not very many people are even aware of it because it's not, it is invisible. And from what I've gathered, it's going to be a delayed reaction, right? We don't have birds falling out of the sky right now, or the insects, or sure, there's 2,000 families that have been displaced, but the corporate engine that runs our civilization keeps saying, oh, methane's okay. It's the additives that we put into it that people are reacting to, or, you know, or this or that, or that it goes into the atmosphere and it disappears. So there's kind of like, it's kind of like radiation where you are exposed to it and it might take some time before you feel, well, our Earth, of course, is going to feel the impact of all this metric tons of methane going into the air. I mean, talk about Murphy's Law. When we don't need a catastrophe of this magnitude to happen, here it is happening. And we have found out since this has happened that this is not the only methane leak happening in the United States right now. It's the largest. But most places that store methane have leakage that they just expect it to happen. And it's not front page news. So,
well, I mean, this is often viewed as collateral damage for civilization, right? So, I mean, civilization is unimpeachable. We don't even have a conversation about it. So,
right.
So
and
obviously,
I love that term.
Something's got to give if we're going to have hot showers and bacon.
Well, and it's Oscar season, and there's a controversy in Oscar season. There's a lack of diversity at the Oscars this year, so there's other things to talk about rather than some sort of disaster.
Beyond bacon?
Right.
Now, you mentioned some of the health risks and this thing being largely invisible, but children are having nosebleeds due to the methane saturating the breathable air, and apparently so are horses in the area. What else? Are there other health risks that so far have been largely hidden from view by the mainstream media?
Or, well, the he and Ha, the officials, you know, say, and if you Google methane, long-term health hazards, they say that there aren't any.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah, so, but here's the thing. It's a soup. It's not just the methane. If it was, maybe methane doesn't have a long-term health hazard. Maybe you could sit in a room with methane and oxygen and not have anything happen to you. I don't know. The study hasn't been done because of money, right? And the other thing is it's just not methane. There's other gases that are in homes, off-gassing from carpets, toys, all that, and it's mixing up. You know, the Porter Ranch is definitely saturated with methane. There's no doubt about that. But it's not just methane. This is part of the problem with compartmentalizing one element and saying, well, you can't blame methane, yet it's the predominant element right now, and it hadn't been the predominant element a few, you know, back in September, the children and the horses and the dogs weren't having bloody noses. So, again, it's about litigation. We're in a very litigious society, and corporations have a big pocket. And again, it's the, you know, it's what's driving this rat wheel that we are mostly on. Some of us have tried, like we've mentioned, to get off of it before, but it's a challenge. And collateral damage is so such a desensitizing, is that the right word, term for suffering. If you know, we talk about near-term health, near-term human extinction and what we can do about it and what we can't do about it. But what we can do about it every day is to try to curb human suffering. Yet those that have amassed and hoarded wealth don't seem to have curbing human suffering on their agenda, and certainly corporations don't. So I don't know where to go with this.
So what has been done so far, and what is being done, and what has failed as far as trying to, I guess, quote unquote, fix this leak?
Well, they're trying their best. You know, all the king's horses and all the king's men are trying to get that leak. They're trying to stop that leak. That's for sure. It's not BP, the oil spill, was stopped up. I believe they fixed the leak in 80-some days.
Mm-hmm.
And here we're approaching over 100 on this one. I read that it's a no-fly zone, that they have prohibited any pictures being taken out there. They're afraid of fire. But I've also read that two craters have appeared. I don't know what that means, two craters, that they're holding together with some tension wire. Again, you know, I'm part of the public that's going, what does that mean, you're holding craters together with tension wires? And they keep saying that the end of February, the beginning of March, they will have this under control. And when they said that, when they'll have it under control, I thought about the oil spill, and I thought, I wonder if they have the oil spill under control. We know that it's not gushing like it was. I don't know if you all remember, but they had this underwater camera.
Yeah.
And I think that was one of the selling points, is having everybody look at their news monitor and watch the oil gushing from this nifty underwater camera. And I thought, well, maybe they have that underwater camera on now. You know, can we look now and see if the gusher is not gushing, but maybe just leaking a little bit? but there was I couldn't find it. So, but I did find out that there's still oil spilling into the Gulf. It's not BP. It's another. Apparently, Hurricane Ivan, there was 28 oil wells that were buried under sand from Hurricane Ivan, and they're leaking. They're not leaking. They're not gushing, so it doesn't make the news. That's another thing that we've been kind of programmed with. If it's not really gory and if it's not really huge and if we can't see it, taste it, and smell it, then most people put it on, you know, on the back burner. No pun intended.
What's the danger zone? How far does this disaster extend?
I imagine it extends worldwide when the story is done, right? Because methane goes into the atmosphere, it starts trapping.
Yeah, okay. I mean, in the relatively short term, are there health hazards to people living in the area? Is it worse in low-lying areas or above Porter Ranch? What's the near-term threat to human lives? And I'm also thinking about the ionizing radiation that apparently extends throughout the danger zone.
Right, and that has not been talked about. Again, I blame it on money. Because I believe that we have the technology to go in there with the best equipment and see, monitor, take readings. They say radon, you know. California is notorious for radon. And I'm wondering how many houses at Porter Ranch have been tested for radon. Here again is the money question. Once you test your house for radon, you have to disclose it when you go to sell it. So that prohibits a lot of people from testing their home. So we have radon that might be in this soup of methane. I also read this morning, I'd like other people to do their due diligence, that there was some spent fuel rods from a nuclear facility buried in the 60s around the Aliso Canyon area. So, you know, who do you believe and how much of this is going to affect the health, not only of the individuals, but of the planet? Right now, I'm living 45 miles from there, and the boys at the high school are playing football. The tennis teams are outside playing tennis. The cross-country runners are running cross-country. And I did see a couple of people with masks on the other day, and I thought, I wonder if, you know, those kids are aware. Their parents put some masks on them and said, you know, if you're going to run outside and be breathing this invisible
poison.
No, probably they were talking about it, so their parents put the mask on them so they would shut up.
It just sounds like it's just going to be another Aaron Brockovich movie. You know, after it's all said and done and everybody's been poisoned and gotten sick, and then they'll say, yeah, see, we should have learned from this.
Well, Mike, it takes about 5 to 10 years to make a movie. You think will last that long?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I just can see Julia Roberts walking up to the podium again in my head and, you know, talking about this tragedy in the past tense and how it could have been avoided. It made a great movie.
Yeah. And isn't that that's another problem, is like we need more methane to keep our homes warm and to dry our clothes. I mentioned this because I was watching the citizens of Porter Ranch during, I guess they had some kind of panel, and the citizens were able to go up to the panel and, you know, talk about what's happening to their families. And I thought, how many of those families have gas dryers, clothes dryers? And how many of those families have a clothes line outside to hang their clothes and dry their clothes? And how many of them have, you know, a solar oven, right? I don't think so. 400,000 to $1 million homes, I think they all have gas dryers, and I don't think 1% has clothes lines. So there's this entitlement issue that runs really, really deep in our society, that we know that these infrastructures are aging. There was another little tidbit I read on a link someone sent me about the Environmental Protection Agency had sent the gas company some funds of over, I don't know, $3 million, maybe it was $300,000, I don't know, quite a bit, to go ahead and fix some of these aging components. And they didn't. So I started thinking, well, where did the money go? And I immediately started thinking, you know, if I ride my bike around, and I've been seeing a lot of new fancy gas trucks. I wonder if they bought gas trucks for their crew instead of fixing these aging components that might cause an environmental catastrophe. I don't know. They haven't answered that question. And there's money. There was money allotted. You know, maybe they made a big, God, heaven forbid, a big contribution to some local politician.
That would never happen.
No, I mean, why would I even think that, right?
It's blasphemy.
So, all those questions come to mind. I'm wondering what's going to happen this summer, you know, with this added methane in the air, if it's just going to be unbearably hot here in California, like it is in some parts of New Zealand and Australia. I don't know. I don't know what's happening as far as how this is going to play out. But I do...
Yeah, I mean, let's say they don't fix it. Let's say they can't fix it. I think the story just eventually just gets buried. I mean, it's already been buried.
Right.
Well,
In fact, you know, we haven't heard anything since the very early days from doctors saying, evacuate now. That made the headlines in the first few weeks of the leak. Uh-huh. And so...
Yes,
is it just
October.
Is it all going to go away now? You know, we have the presidential debates going on. We have
the Oscars.
We have all kinds of things.
The Olympics.
Yeah. We have stuff trending on Facebook.
We have stuff to do.
That doesn't have anything to do with methane at Porter Ranch.
Or anything that sounds like methane.
So what do we do, Angie? What do we do? Tell us about the individual and societal response to the matters that matter, and maybe tell us a little bit about the contemporary distractions as well. But first, we just thought we'd sing that little tune for you. I sound a lot like Mick Jagger when I get my voice on.
How does it feel, right, to be without a home, a complete unknown, like a rolling stone? I wish... Dylan had sung that song.
You know this song?
Huh?
You know
this
song.
I do love that song, but I wish Bob Dylan had I looked on the internet. I thought, well, maybe there's a rendition of Angie by Bob Dylan. No, I guess it's only Mick Jagger that can stretch my name.
If it was Bob, you wouldn't understand it at all.
So what do we do? I think we need to be kind to each other. You know, you mentioned my even these awful corporate people that can't think in humanitarian terms. You mentioned my blog on the Huffington Post, and I ended it, you know, by saying that our human compassion binds us to one another, and compassion binds us to all sentient beings. There's nowhere to run to. Evacuate to where? Is there a safe place on this planet? If there is, please let me know about it. And please let me know if the people there are going to welcome 20 million Los Angeles residents, you know? Is there a refugee spot? Is it, you know, can we get to Planet B? What to do? I kind of am on the live each day to the fullest, you know. I go to bed dead tired every day. I have a huge list of things that I want to accomplish. Take the adventure that was sent to us. And every day is an adventure for every one of us as long as we're here. I don't know what to do. I'm almost 60 years old, so I've had a long life. I don't have children. If I had a child at Porter Ranch right now, I think I would be pretty nervous. If I had a horse at Porter Ranch right now, I think I'd be looking at alternatives. But then again, where is it? You know, do you all know? I know New Mexico sounds pretty cool. You know, maybe we should all move to New Mexico or
no,
Alaska.
No, don't come here.
No, it's all horrible.
It's
place.
Full. Where? Yeah, we're all full here.
Yeah, and people are carrying guns and shooting each other.
Right, bad place. West. Bad.
Rattlesnakes.
Go to Arizona.
Arizona, good.
Go to Texas,
I'd go to Arizona,
right?
If I were you.
Here, Prescott's nice.
You're listening to Nature Bites Last on the Progressive Radio Network. Mike Sliva and I are interviewing Angie Cordero, and we're talking about the methane coming out of the leak, or whatever you want to call it, at Porter Ranch in Southern California. Angie, what's your experience with denial and beyond with respect to human extinction? You brought it up maybe 10 minutes ago, and I wanted to pursue that a little bit more. Do you talk to people? Do people talk to you?
I start the conversation, and interestingly enough, this woman that I was talking to yesterday, she said, well, I'm just waiting for the last straw that will break the camel's back and everybody will be aware, right? And I'm thinking to myself, the last straw? I mean, haven't we had, like,
I'm still looking for the first straw.
Of straws already? You know, that camel's gone. I don't... And in your interview with Sarah Perry, she mentioned that, you know, people know, they have this intuitive feeling that something is lurking. But it's taken me a few months to, and perhaps also my theosophical background, that in theosophy, we really encourage people to get their own insight on things that are written, things that they see, things that they hear. With contemplative meditation, you know, think about what kind of insight some information has for you. And I didn't go through denial very, I didn't stay in denial very long. I mostly stayed in anger, and I'm still dealing with anger. As far as how we got here.
You say that, but the other day you went quickly to Gallows Humor, stage 6, when I was corresponding with you.
Uh-huh.
You said your goal is to die laughing, preferably at yourself.
Well, that's always been my goal, even before I knew about near-term human extinction. You know, I think that...
What kind of gas?
laughter is just amazing. It makes me feel good. If you laugh long enough, you'll get the whole room laughing, and then you won't even know what they're laughing about.
That's what we do with this show, I think.
I think so.
Oh, wait, it's a different show.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's great. But some people don't have that funny bone, or, you know, they don't find it humorous. They don't find that, you know, there's a distinction, too, between die-off and extinction. And I think people, I know that people that I've talked to can wrap their minds around a massive human die-off much easier than they can wrap their minds around total human extinction.
Well, of course, because mass die-off doesn't involve them.
Exactly.
Everybody I talk to, if I make the mistake of giving a date for near-term human extinction, say I say it's going to be 2050, then everybody I talk to assumes they're going to live until December 31st, 2049. And everybody's going to die at midnight. It's the kind of thing that it just doesn't affect us.
Well, yes, yeah, some people have helmets.
That and... I don't know, whatever it takes for people not to take responsibility, you know, and to keep doing what they're doing. We're kind of habitual machines in a way. So if you have to do something different by thinking, by having a piece of information that's undeniable, that's kind of disconcerting, you know? I'll rock your world. I don't know. I have a book by Pema Chodron sitting on my desk, and it's called No Time to Lose, A Timely Guide to the Way of the Bodhisattva. And when the end of the day comes and you're about to fall asleep, you think about the things that were wonderful that day, right? The people you helped, the animals that you were kind to. Maybe I have a spider that just won't leave me alone. I don't know what kind of spider it is, but I blow on it, I put incense around it, and it comes out every day to see me. And I'm thinking, one of these days I'm going to catch you and put you outside. And as soon as I think that, this little spider scurries back under some place that it's, you know, too difficult for me to do anything about. But if we take the time to really relate to what is in front of us, the present, right? That's why it's a gift. And not worry so much about something that we really have no control over. Even those that are in control, the theys, I love it when people say they do this and they do that. Well, who is they? They don't even have control over the magnitude of what we have done to this planet and what is on the horizon right now. And I hope I don't start crying, but, you know, it just makes me so angry I could spit.
Well, try not to spit on the microphone while we're talking to you. That's our only request. What or who inspires you to keep doing the work you're doing to get up for another day, besides that spider?
Who? I don't think it's a being. I think it's just an energy that I have no control over. I have a joie de vivre. I have since I was little. I think it's a miraculous thing to be alive. Maybe it'll be a miraculous thing to be dead. Who knows, right? That's the mystery, right? So I count my blessings. And like I said, I've had a very charmed life. I love hard work. And I love solving problems and helping people or beings that can't help themselves. So it's been a very... And I love the computer. You know, of all the ages for me to be born in, I'm rather an introvert. I like my time to myself. I don't like people infringing on my space too much. So I have this computer where I can, you know, reach out people all over the planet and turn it off when I'm over it. You know, so this is like the perfect time for me to be alive. And so that's what inspires me. And the people that I surround myself with, the work that I do, I work for... one of the things that I forgot to mention in my in your little introduction to me is that for the last 5 years, I've been the recipe editor for an online publication called The Peaceable Table. Nice. Now, that's a lot of fun because I get these wonderful recipes. I go into the kitchen and I cook them and feed them to people. And, you know, people are just like, this tastes so good. And the house smells wonderful. And, you know, so those kind of, just live simply so others can simply live is such a wonderful quote. And there's nothing degrading about that.
We have a kitchen here and a live studio audience. So maybe when you're at the show, I'm just saying, we have ingredients here.
And we haven't eaten lunch. Well, it sounds like you have a great balance in your life because it seems that that's the struggle for people that are dealing with the predicament that we're in is they, one, they have no one to talk to about it in most cases, and two, they don't necessarily know how to balance to stay out of those dark places because it's an easy place to go. You know, if you spend a lot of time online and reading about these things and like you do writing them, it can be difficult, but it sounds like you've got it together pretty well and you know what's important. So.
Thank you, and I really enjoyed your last article.
Oh, thank you.
That you wrote for the Good Men or yeah. Good Man Project. Are there more than one? Is there more than one?
There's more than one. There's two of us, right?
Two of us that we know about.
Yeah.
You know, now that we're taking the white man approach, making it all about us or anything.
Right.
Yeah. Well, do what you love is always. Something that people say, but I think more importantly is to love what you're doing. You know, yeah. If you find yourself waiting tables or doing something that you rather not, just have fun with it. You know, just say have fun with it because that's where you are. That's the adventure that you're having today, and there's nothing that's keeping you from changing that adventure. You know, you could wake up tomorrow morning and you can say and do, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm not going to play this game anymore. I'm changing the tune. You know, I'm taking that record off and I'm putting another song on. Do you guys have another song like Peter, Paul, and Mary?
No. But yeah. We can sing some Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Yeah, and that'll make everybody turn off their radio right now.
Right on.
Oh, well, yeah, we could all be Peter, Paul, and Mary, you guys.
There we go.
There you go.
Well, thank you for your time, Angie, and we'd love to have you back on sometime.
Oh, thank you all, and keep up the great work, and please stay as funny and as keep rocking this boat.
Thank you.
We will.
Thank you, Angie.
You do the
same.
Okay.
You've been a great guest.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And you can find Angie Cordero's work. She blogs at Huffington Post, and you can go through her articles probably by looking in the archives. Guy, climate update?
Well, I'd like to start with a story.
Oh.
It's personal, and it's also professional. A couple of weeks ago, I noticed that the emeritus faculty page for my home department at the University of Arizona didn't include me on the list. I've been emeritus for about 7 years. It included a dead person, but not me. And so I took that clue. I thought, oh, this is how I rank at the university. So I asked to be added. And it was all going swimmingly. A young staff woman collected a bunch of information I sent her and assured me it would all be posted the following day.
Right.
That was 2 weeks ago.
Oh.
Oh. So I assumed she was shut down by the department head, who barely knows me. He assumed the office long after I left active service on campus. So a week goes by. I write the young woman to ask if the department head, Stuart Marsh, had stopped the process. No response.
Mm.
Rinse and repeat a few days later. Her silence speaks volumes, at least to me. Or maybe she died.
Oh, yeah.
It happens.
And now she's recognized.
As emeritus. But I'm not. So I write to Stuart Marsh himself. A few days pass by, and he lets me know he'll add me to the list. Emphasis on he will add me to the list. Mm. The department head controls the message. Patriarchy is alive and well on the University of Arizona campus, as it was when I decided to get out of Tucson. But Dr. Marsh has a problem with the description of my research.
Oh.
Stunningly. I'll quote from his message, quote, I have a bit of a problem with your description of your research, and I suggest we go with the following for your research. Threats to natural and human ecosystems. Mm. Apparently, near-term human extinction as a result of abrupt climate change doesn't put students in debt. I mean, in the seats. So we need to massage the message to minimize parental resistance. Whatever, Stuart.
That really reinforces our call-out shows on people who are tied to the institution.
Exactly.
Hmm.
So let's not scare the children. And by children, I mean university administrators, of course.
All right, guy, use some big words and tell us what's going on.
Okay. According to a paper published December 29th, 2015, in the online issue of Reviews of Geophysics, agriculture by humans 7,000 years ago likely slowed a natural cooling process. This paper settles a decade-long debate regarding the role of humans in global warming during the Holocene. In the absence of civilization, Earth would have entered the early stages of a natural ice age.
Mm,
so we rock.
Right.
That's the message here.
Right.
Analysis of tropospheric data has linked elevated levels of ozone with Indonesian forest fires, according to a paper in the January 13th, 2016 issue of Nature Communications. Like methane, ozone is a potent but short-lived greenhouse gas. As indicated in the abstract, quote, this study suggests a larger role for biomass burning in the radiative forcing of climate in the remote tropical Western Pacific than is commonly appreciated. I've added this information to feedback number 4. A paper in the January 19th, 2016 issue of Geophysical Research Letters addresses the issue of Sandy-like superstorms under the influence of a substantially warmer Atlantic Ocean. The abstract of the paper includes these lines, quote, we find that possible responses of Sandy-like superstorms under the influence of a substantially warmer Atlantic Ocean bifurcate into two groups. In the first group, storms are similar to present-day Sandy, except they are much stronger, with peak power destructive index increased by 50 to 80%, heavy rain by 30 to 50%, and maximum storm size approximately doubled.
Wow.
Bear in mind that they start with storms are similar to present-day Sandy.
But different.
Except they're fucking huge. Yeah,
they're completely different.
No. In the second group, the bad group, storms amplify substantially.
Oh.
With peak power destructive index increased by 100 to 160%, heavy rain by 70 to 180%, and maximum storm size more than tripled compared to present-day Superstorm Sandy.
Wow, that's going to make a great film.
Holy cow.
The movie.
So yeah, right. I mean, the first one was there's no change except, holy cow, it's huge.
Right.
It's going to kill everybody on the East Coast. Yeah. And the second one, it's a little more dire than that. Whew. For those listeners looking for aliens to save us from ourselves, and you know who you are, a paper in the January 20th, 2016 issue of Astrobiology has bad news.
Yeah.
The study indicates life on other planets likely would be brief and become extinct very quickly. You're laughing way too much. I was thinking when we were talking to Angie, at some point we're going to have a giggles and laughter show. And that's going to be the whole thing.
Maybe we need one.
It's just big fun stuff.
Yeah.
But you're laughing at stuff that nobody else laughs at, so I'm not sure we can pull that off.
We're a little different.
The January 2016 issue of Annals of Applied Biosciences includes a paper titled Positive Feedback Between Climate Change, Forest Pests, and the Carbon Cycle. This is one of those rare cases in which the title tells the whole story, except it does it with a grammatical error. It says positive feedback between climate change, forest pests, and the carbon cycle. And really, if we're talking about more than two things, it should be among, not between.
Nice.
This is yet another example of an interaction among self-reinforcing feedback mechanisms.
Right.
I just want to point that out. That this is not just an English class. We're doing other things here, too.
Thanks, Grammar Nazi.
Paper in the January 25th, 2016 online issue of the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences reports that previous research on the effects of climate change have underestimated thermal expansion due to warming of the ocean. Thermal expansion accounts for about half of global average sea level rise so far. According to this paper, thermal expansion is about twice as large over the past 12 years as previously assumed. We'll put this tidbit into the category of faster than expected. Like, we've never heard that one before. Now, according to every reliable source on the topic, 2015 was the hottest year in history. It marks the first time since more than 100,000 years ago that hippopotamuses can be found in Britain.
Wow.
Think about that for a minute.
Yeah.
And these are basically just big lizards in the water.
That's a shorter flight to Africa.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. There you go. No need to go to Africa.
Safari in Great Britain.
Well, think about it. The Africans are moving to Great Britain, too.
Yeah,
because it's hot. So why not take a hippo with you? But here's the odd thing about this record-setting year, which came on the heels of a record-setting previous year. The context for reporting this record-setting year in 2015 has changed, effective this year. Mm. Whereas mainstream outlets previously reported the temperature relative to the standard baseline of 1750, which is commonly accepted as the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, now the standard is either the 1880s or the 1960s through 1990s. In either case, early global average rise in temperature is ignored. If you're keeping score, as I am, then you know that we're well above 1 degree Celsius with respect to 1750, but you'd never know that based on recent reporting of the issue.
Isn't that convenient?
Isn't that something?
Well, hey, change the game, change the math.
Right, so you ignore the 0.2 that happened between 1750 and 1850. That's 0.2. What could possibly go right? It looks like 2016 will break the record from 2015, which broke the record from 2014, 3 years in a row of the hottest year during the instrumental record, is a clear sign abrupt climate change is underway. But you'd never know that either based on recent reporting of the issue.
They could change the definition of in a row.
Or is.
Right.
It depends on what your definition of is.
That's true.
We've done that before now, haven't we? But quite a bit earlier than most of our audience probably remembers.
Yeah. A youngster.
About 2.5 hours ago.
Yeah.
Time flies. That was fun.
And you change your definition.
Right. About 2.5 hours ago, the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists updated their doomsday clock. You might recall that last year, they included climate change as a threat as they moved the clock closer to midnight. Last year, the clock was moved up to 3 minutes before midnight. Today's announcement, which came at the National Press Club, kept the clock at 3 minutes before midnight with, quote, utter dismay.
Hmm.
This, according to the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists, is, quote, not good news. For the second consecutive year, anthropogenic climate change is included as a threat. This year, however, the threat from climate change remains the same as last year. According to the Bulletin, the clock's position remains unchanged in part because climate change is neither worse nor better than this time last year. In a classic case of hopium inspired by ignorance, the Bulletin points to, quote, some modestly positive developments in the climate change arena.
Modestly. Did you just break the record from last year?
Yes.
That's an all-time record. That doesn't seem very modest.
Well, yeah. It's fascinating. They talked about Paris as taking steps in the right direction to fix this whole climate change problem.
Does that affect the clock?
Yes, and that affected their clock.
Oh.
Because we're taking steps in the right direction. We're going to keep it at 3 minutes till midnight.
Isn't that sweet? You know, I don't run a car. Is that going to help the clock?
I think that'll move it back to 4 minutes.
Nice. You should get rid of your car. We have 5 minutes then.
My car hasn't run properly for years.
Oh, we have 5 minutes.
So we got 5 minutes right now, I think.
How much time we got left in the show?
That's going to wrap it up for us.
Oh, okay. Well, that about wraps it up, folks. Make sure to like our Facebook page, Nature Best Laughs, and Progressive Radio Network, or join our Facebook group as well. It's Nature Best Laughs on PRN.FM. Feel free to post questions you'd like us to address on the show, and continue to follow Guy's blog at GuyMcPherson.com for further updates, essays, and speaking tours. And if you see one of my essays from the Good Men Project, please share it. We'll see you on the radio next Tuesday afternoon at 3 p.m. Eastern. It's a call-in show, and it's also a call-out show. Specifically, we'll be joined by one of our favorites, Corey Morningstar, in calling out activist and author Naomi Klein, author of Shock Doctrine, No Logo, and a 2014 book, This Changes Everything, Capitalism versus the Climate. If you missed the show, make sure to find us in the archives at PRN.FM or at Stitcher.com and rate us on iTunes. Thanks again to our guest, Angie Cordero, and also to Aprazin for his music. Please share the link if you're able to for our show. Until next time, remember, the dominant culture has been very clever, but in the end,
nature bats last.